Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today has a full-time job, a wife, young kids. He's got a pretty busy schedule. A lot of people might think he just doesn't have time to invest in rental properties, but he somehow managed to find the time, and in doing so, he's built a lot of wealth and a lot of monthly cash flow for his family. The way he's been able to do this is that he's been really efficient with his time, and he's simplified and automated as many of the tasks as he can. So today on the show, we're going to find out how he's been doing this, how he's been finding properties, how he's financing them, and how he easily manages his rental portfolio. Let's take a really quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll meet Chris from Houston. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified. And I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. It can be a real challenge to stay organized and keep track of all your rental income and expenses for tax time. Most people end up with a pile of receipts that you need to sort through and make sense of. I want to let you know about an easier way. It's a software that I use called Rental Hero. It was built specifically for rental property owners. They have a really easy to use web portal as well as an app where you can easily input all your income and expenses. You can take pictures of receipts and you're done with the paper receipts for good. They have a free 30-day trial. You can try it out. No credit card required. If you don't like it, there's nothing to cancel. Just go to rentaltrial.com. That's rentaltrial, T-R-I-A-L.com. So about 7 years ago, you were hanging out with a couple of buddies and you guys were talking. What happened? What came with that conversation?
Yeah, so I had just gotten a new job in the Houston area, and it was one that I thought I was going to spend the rest of my time with. It was corporate America. It was a cushy job. It felt, you know, it wasn't too stressful. And so I found some new friends in the area, and we were at lunch one day, and it kind of sunk into us that, hey, we're going to be here a while, right? This is going to be, and it's not all that it's cooked up to be. You know, your whole life, you go through college, school, and you get that job. And I got that job. And after about 6 months, the honeymoon wore off. And so we started talking, you know, we've got to find something else, whether it's a hobby or, you know, hopefully something else that can make us some money or keep life exciting. And there were five of us at this lunch, and we decided, hey, you know what? We should get into real estate.
The other guys kind of bailed out, but you and the one buddy went forward and started buying rentals.
Those other partners started saying, hey, you know what? This is fun, but we're happy to be money guys. We don't want to be, you know, we're not into the business and into the passionate about it. And Dave and myself realized through this process that we love this, and it was something that we could grow and scale.
So you and your partner today have 50 properties, and you guys both have full-time jobs. You have families, you have busy lives, but you're able to manage these 50 properties while working full-time.
Yeah. So yeah, I think we just cleared number 55. In fact, that's a good story. But so we, yes. And so I work from home. I'm an IT consultant. And so my time is flexible in terms of being able to, I used to commute downtown every day, and looking back, I don't know how I ever survived, because it felt like I was going to an island every day, totally separate from my family, separate from any type of activity outside of work. And then I would come home at night And I could never go back to that. I joke with Dave, my partner, is like, I would take a huge pay cut just to never have to do that again. So that affords us that ability to be flexible and run this business off the side of our desk, if you will, but still give an honest full day's work to our employers, because I'm not commuting 2.5 hours a day. And so the day I stopped commuting and got this job, I've been a at home consultant for about 6 years now. And the day I left that commute, it was like something happened in my brain, because immediately I had 10% more in my day and I didn't know what to do with it. It was fantastic. And so that alone, I attribute to a lot of our success to be able to manage this on top of all of our, you know, kids and all kinds of other things pulling at our schedule. That has been the ability. And then mixing that with developing very thought out and very clear systems that work for us to help us accelerate and be more efficient has been key.
Now, managing 55 properties sounds like that's enough that could keep you busy full time. But also buying 55 houses is a lot of work. I mean, that like I can't imagine how many deals you've looked at and how you've done this. So how did you find the time to find that many deals? I mean, because to buy 55 properties over 7 years, I mean, you're buying a lot of houses every year. Like, so how do you find the time to even just buy the houses?
Yeah, good question. So it's ultimate efficiency. And so for us, we probably could have bought more had we spent more time doing it. But what we did for the bulk of our properties, about 80%, I would say maybe 85, we bought from yellow letters, right? We're familiar with those. And so we would mail those out. We'd mail 6 letters over about 4.5 months to about 1,000 people. And, you know, my own kids and Dave's kids would actually stuff the letters. That was part of our, you know, try to teach them about some of this stuff and let them earn a little money on the side. We have the letter, we have the letters printed from a third party, but then we'd stuff and stamp them and we'd mail those. And then we'd have those people would call and they would call a Google Voice mailbox. And so we weren't taking calls per se. They would just go to this mailbox and then voicemail. And then we would call back the leads that potential leads that looked good and they weren't just tire kickers. And Dave would do that on his way home from work. He would do it in his free time. And then we would visit the home if they were, you know, if we could at least get in the ballpark of a price. We got so good at knowing these deals because we were very target. We call it the farm. We would target about 2 or 3 zip codes and that was it. And so you could tell me any house in that zip code and that street, and I could get within $5,000 or $10,000 of its value by just knowing, because we knew it so well. And so we were so focused, it made it easier to not waste our time on, you know, leads all over the city, you know, of Houston, which is
general. Right. Okay. All right. Yeah. That makes sense. All right. So you've dialed into a particular area, a couple of neighborhoods that you're really targeting, and you know the houses. I mean, just because you're in that neighborhood all the time, you're looking at properties. You know the house. If someone says, I live at 123 Main Street, you've probably looked at 125 Main Street. So that saves you time. So was that a big part, like that efficiency?
It was. And we were fortunate in the fact that the neighborhoods that we want are not too far from our own residences. And the way we targeted those in the beginning was, I don't want to say they were inefficient markets, because I don't believe in inefficient markets per se. But for whatever reason, in those neighborhoods, they were houses that if you could buy a house with an 80% mortgage and, you know, have a standard 30-year mortgage, the mortgage note with taxes was so much lower than what the rent was. I mean, so much lower. And so we could see this rent to mortgage inefficiency or differential there. And we thought, hey, we've got to own that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that has been our goal, is to just, and it has stayed true throughout the years. Of course, rents have gone up and taxes have gone up, but that gap has existed. And so if these people could only afford to own a house or be in the mindset of owning a house, then their rent would be, or their, you know, their living costs would be so much lower.
Cheaper,
so we wanted to capitalize on that.
Yeah. So give me some numbers. Like, so typically what are you buying the properties for? And then what are they renting out for?
So a standard deal for us, I would say, is somewhere between $80,000 and $90,000. for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house that's 1,300 to 2,000 square feet.
Okay.
One-story house and 2-car garage and in an HOA neighborhood. So these are neighborhoods that are taken care of. They have common areas. Some have, you know, neighborhood pools and whatnot. But they're all built between the mid-70s and mid-80s.
Okay.
And so there's some deferred maintenance. You know, they might have some mildew on them and power wash in a while. Maybe needs a new roof. Maybe, you know, $1,000 worth of yard work. And then on the inside, you might have the earthy colors of the 80s and 70s, you know, right. If it's been a really long time.
Yeah.
But so what we're buying from are tired landlords, maybe senior citizens who have lived there their whole lives and are moving on to be closer to family or in some cases have passed away. And so we will buy these houses from people who have a significant amount of equity and are willing to sell it at a discount to us to just get rid of it, right? So they don't have to. They're not having to fix it up so it can be on the MLS and then pay a commission to a realtor. We will go buy these houses without, we'll walk through it once for 15 minutes, check all the major systems, you know, with just an eye check, and then make them an offer, right? And if the pain's great enough for them that they want to move, they'll take it. And so that has been our experience. So we'll buy it for 80 or 90. If it has a tenant in it already, we'll just write it out. Then we'll raise rent sometimes. If it doesn't have a tenant, we'll then probably put somewhere between $7,000 and $12,000 into it. So that would include paint, floors, maybe new countertops if it's old formica, some new light fixtures, fix up the place, and then it'll rent for $1,300 to $1,350.
Okay, those are pretty good numbers. Okay,
yeah, exactly. And so our biggest ratio or number that we look at is the rent to price ratio. And so that is the amount of rent you get in a month divided by our all in price, right? So the age old wisdom said 1%ers, right? So $100,000 house for $1,000 a month is great, mm-hmm. or at least doable. And so we're shooting more for, you know, $85,000, maybe $90,000, and then a rent of $1,300. And so that ratio approaches 1.3, 1.4. And that's been our way to make sure that we have enough room in the deal for any mishaps or surprises or downturns and make us quite a bit of cash flow.
Now, what about financing? Are you coming up with 20% down payments for all the houses you're buying?
So we would take our houses that we would buy, and at first we would use, you know, whether it was our home equity loan or a rich friend who had $250,000 sitting in a checking account, and we'd give them a little bit of interest, and we'd buy a house. And then we'd flip it and make just a little $5,000-$10,000 on these houses. And then we'd take that money that we would get from that profit from that flip and then use that money as a down payment on the next deal we would find to help us, secure that down payment.
Okay.
And we would do that 5 or 6, 7 times. And it was so sad because every time we'd have to sell one, to buy another or sell 2 to buy 1. And that felt very slow to us. You know, but it was our natural progression. And then eventually where we're at today, we have been able to find banks that because of our history and our kind of our reputation now, they will lend to us on appraised value. And what that means is we'll buy a house, let's say for $90,000, we'll put 10 into it. So we're in $100,000 of cash. And then we'll walk up to this bank and say, hey, we have this house. We'd like a loan on it. It's not a refi. It's just it's a finance. And then they say, oh, great. That house is worth, you know, $120,000. We just appraised it and we'll give you 80% of that. And so that allows us to get all of our money back out and it still cash flows, right? And so that has been our MO for the last, I want to say 30, 35 houses.
So at first you were flipping houses to raise money and then you would use that money for down payments. But now with being able to finance at the appraised value, the net effect of that is you're buying properties without any of your cash in the deal?
Correct. It's a free house. I would tell people that a free house and they don't understand that, right? Obviously, it's not free because we have a loan, but it takes zero of our own money in the end.
The downside to having that much leverage is that your loan payment is that much bigger and your cash flow is a little bit less. So are you finding that you're able to still be profitable having that much leverage?
Great question. So as we have shifted that way and as properties have gotten more expensive, we've noticed that, right? So We're still profitable. And so I think the best way to say it is our perspective has changed. And so are we in the growth phase of our business where we want to buy as many of these as we can? And I'm not saying bank on appreciation, but bank on the fact that they're going to be paid off in 20 years. Or do we take some of that money, the cash flow, and pay down maybe the smallest loans? Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's something we deal with every day, but or in terms of trying to fight through that. But we are profitable currently, but the margins are shrinking.
Now, let's talk about how you manage these properties. Because, I mean, this is you have a lot of tenants, you have a lot of houses. How do you manage these properties while also doing the duties for your job? And maybe we can break it down to tasks. So with a showing, so like if you have a vacancy and you're going to do a showing, how do you do that? Like, can you get out of the office for a little bit and show a property, or how do you do that?
Yeah. So great question. So what we've typically done, we used to show them, right? So we're both agents. And so we'd list it on the MLS and people would call us and say, hey, I want to see this house. And they go, oh, great. Okay. And we'd go down to the house, which is anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes away from our residence. And 80% of the time, the people would not show up. Yeah. It was so frustrating to us because it was a waste of our time. And it was just, it would take us away from other, you know, from our families, or it'd be on the weekends, whatever. And so what we decided to start doing, and this is all Dave's doing, he figured out a way to kind of short circuit that. What we would do instead is they would call us and we'd say, okay, great. You want to see the property. Why don't you call me when you're on your way? And so then they would call us and then we'd say, hey, you know what? We're not able to come right now. Something came up or whatever. Why don't you just show the house yourself? And we'd give them the lockbox code to the property. And at first that felt weird, right? It's like, is this going to be okay? Is this safe? But we came to the realization that there are houses. They're empty. There's nothing in them. These are people who want to live there. And so they show themselves the house. We give them instructions on how to get in. There's a lockbox on the front door. We tell them to turn off the lights and lock it back up. And we've done that now for 4 years and we've had zero issues.
Awesome.
So that has allowed us to show the house to people without actually having to leave our house. And if they're curious or interested after that, then we email them applications. In fact, there are several tenants I have never met in person still because of the way we do things. And it's been great. Right. And I think it's a function of this next generation who is used to electronic communication and electronic everything. And it's been nice not to have to get away. The only time we do have to get away is when we do have a turnover, and that is where we have to go check out the property and see what needs to be done and then queue it up for a make ready.
So let's talk about that next. So when a tenant leaves, one of you will go over to the property, take a look at it, and then just kind of survey what needs to be done.
Exactly. We'll put a lockbox on the front door. Usually we'll take one person. So if it's me, I'll go through, I'll take a video as I'm walking through and kind of dictating exactly what I see and what needs to happen. That way we have a record for the deposit itemization as well, if we're going to take some of their deposit. Mm-hmm. And then we post it. We use Dropbox religiously. And so then everyone can see, or Dave and I can both see the videos and see all the data. And then once we put utilities in our name, we have some pretty fancy systems for that. But then we'll then send the appropriate contractors, if it's a painter, if it's a floor guy, if it's our normal handyman, and send them over and have them, you know, with a punch list to fix it. And then they send us pictures when they're done. And then we list it with pictures that we already have. Or if it's a new property we've never listed before, we'll get a photographer in there to take some pictures. And we'll list it on the MLS and we're off to the races.
So you only need to go over there one time. Like, you're not going back after the contractor goes through to make sure it's done.
Yeah. They send us pictures. It depends on the quality or the amount of rehab, right? If it's just a cleaning and some touch up paint and a couple things, no. But if it's like one we just got, we had one where we had bought it in kind of a rough state and there was already a tenant and they moved out just recently. And in that house, we painted the whole thing, did all the floors, did all the countertops, did all the light fixtures. And so I will be going back over to that one just to make sure it all got tied up nicely together.
How about when a repair comes up? How do you handle that?
Yeah. So the tenants, so I manage about half the properties and Dave manages the other half. And so they don't know, I mean, they only know one of us. And so, and they don't know that we're the owner, and that has been key. And if I can stress that, that point so much has been such a lifesaver for us, because as people, if they're not paying rent, or if they, you know, they really want something fancy in the house that's not, you know, not necessary or not, we can't afford right now, I can use that as juxtaposition or as a, you know, running interference to say, hey, you know, the owner's really not going to go for that, or let me see what I can do. And so there's a little bit of a game there, but it has been so helpful to keep the tenants kind of arm's length from the owner. But so they'll text us. We've trained all the tenants to text us if there's a problem or a repair, and then we will deploy. We ask them to send pictures, and then we'll deploy the right contractor. And we just use some apps to help us track tasks, track work orders, if you will. And then they will go call the tenant, schedule the appointment, and then tell us what the repair is. If it's something serious, they'll call me first before they go and do it. But if it's just something little, toilet or a faucet or something, they'll just go purchase the parts at Home Depot or wherever on our account. I can approve it via text, and then they'll send me pictures of it completed, and then I'll pay them electronically. And so again, I can run the whole business from my phone, which has just been so helpful.
And what about lease signings? So are you doing that electronically too, or do you meet the tenants to sign the leases?
So we will. So through the application process, they'll fill out a standard Texas lease application. And once that is approved, and really that's more of an eye check to make sure they have the income, they send us some pay stubs, they send us ID, they send us things like that. And then if that passes our eye test, which is typically 3 months or 3 times rent for income. So they have monthly income of 3 times the rent. That's pretty much our only stipulation, and that they don't have any evictions on their credit. So once they state all that on their application, which is totally an electronic application we use, we then send them to mysmartmove.com, which is, I know, is a service that I think you recommend.
Yep.
And they, if everything checks out there, then we will send them a lease electronically, and they will e-sign it. And then typically we will meet them at the property. Or if they're pretty comfortable, we'll just give them the lockbox code on the front door once they have paid their first month's rent and deposit, and they can move in. And so, like I said, I haven't met even some of our tenants, just because of the nature of how things have been, whether they've been on vacation or whatever. And so everything is done electronically. It's been really nice.
That all makes so much sense. I can't imagine how people did this 40 years ago.
I mean,
it's so great to live in 2020. Nice. I love it. Now, what do you do if a tenant falls behind on rent? Are you quick to evict them, or do you kind of work with them to get caught up?
So at first we were a little softies at first. And so we would, some people got 10, 15 days behind, and they would tell us, oh, it's coming, and it never did. And we'd have to end up evicting them, or at least asking them to leave. And we'd lose 10, 15, 20 days of rent. Which, you know, I know is not a lot compared to what some people maybe forego. But what we do now is so at the beginning when we sign the lease, whether it's email or via phone or in person, we set up an expectation. We say, this owner, he loves communication. So if you're going to be late or you're having a problem, just tell us ahead of time and we'll come up with a plan, right? But the worst thing you can do is not pay rent. And on the third, nothing comes in. What's going to happen then is he's going to post a 3-day notice. It's a 3-day pay or quit notice that we have in Texas that you just stamp to the front of their door. And then if they don't pay within 3 days, we can start eviction procedures. And so we had tenants at first who were not taking us seriously because we didn't set the expectations up front. And so that was key for us. So all of our tenants now know that the owner means business. Which is me, right?
And so
that has been helpful. So people communicate. If they're having a bad month, they'll call us, you know, the end of the month and say, hey, look, you know, something happened. My car died or whatever. I lost my job. I got a new one, but it's not going to take a week. So we'll put them on a weekly pay rent. So if they can pay a week's worth of rent ahead of time, that will work for us, because it's much harder to turn a tenant over than to just have someone, you know, as long as they can get back on their feet. And I would say about 90% of the time that works. Now, if they go 2 or 3 months and they're still slow paying us and paying weekly, then we'll we'll ask them to leave. And I think only twice have we had to actually go through the eviction process to get somebody out. And even then, they still left before it was finalized because Texas is a pretty landlord-friendly state, and they knew they were, you know, they were in trouble. But we did have to file the, you know, $300 whatever fee to get that process started.
Chris, congratulations on everything you've accomplished. It's really amazing you've been able to do all this while working a full-time job. If anybody wants to reach out to Chris, I've got his contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode249. I'd like to thank today's sponsor for making this episode possible. It's Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. If you're looking to buy a rental property, whether you want to buy your first property or you want to add to your portfolio, the lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge. She's a nationwide lender, and she specializes in helping investors buy rental properties. That's all she does. She's more of an educator than she is a salesperson, and she'll really take the time to understand what it is that you want to accomplish with your rental properties, and she'll help you put together a plan to get there. If you want to find out more or set up a time to talk to Chaley, just go to ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E. lendinggroup.com. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all the pre-qualification fees. NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe if you haven't already. We have new episodes every single Tuesday. If you subscribe, you'll get them delivered to you automatically as soon as they come out. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.